This is David Marler, UFO researcher, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and on this show, I am joined by first-time guest. He has a PhD in physics and advanced degrees in engineering. I'd love to welcome Dr. Jim Sigala. Jim, welcome.
Hey, great being here. Thanks for inviting me.
It's good to have you on. 4.5 years, and I'm just getting round to getting you on now. That's definitely a fault on my part, Jim. Lots to get through in a limited time. First off, for anyone who's unfamiliar with you, your work, could you give us the Cliff Notes version of your background and what's kind of brought you to the UFO topic?
Yeah, sure. So I actually started out as just an engineer doing work for various companies, went back to school, got my PhD in physics. I was very fortunate enough to land an internship with the Institute for Advanced Study out of Austin with Hal Puthoff. He's a very famous investigator of all sorts of crazy paranormal things. And so I got an internship with him, lasted 7 years. So during that 7 years, I was able to do a lot of work with him, learn a lot of things about this subject and UFO research and things like that. So that basically kicked me off into this whole topic.
Growing up through childhood or adulthood, what was the interest in the kind of UFO topic? Was there any?
Well, there wasn't really. I mean, I didn't really understand what I was looking at until later on when, you know, you started to hear things and you start seeing a lot of sci-fi movies and things like that. It was always of interest, but it was never something that was taken seriously. It was more of a, you know, hobbyist type of thing or, you know, just something that I was interested in.
How does, and we're going to get to the crux of this as we go through your kind of history with your work, your science, but a science background and an engineering background, you've got a real nuts and bolts engineering side of things, then you've got a very scientific driven side to you. Sure. Have those ideologies conflicted while studying the UFO topic, or has that maybe helped you in studying it?
Well, it turns out that a lot of the incidences that people have when they're viewing or they see UFOs or have these experiences ends up affecting them in a medical sense. So when I went back for my PhD, and I did it at a later age, I worked as an engineer for 20 years and then decided to go back. So I went back and I said, well, you know, what do I really want to do with my life? And I decided to get into cancer research. And cancer research led me down the road of understanding electromagnetic energy and how it affects the body and radiation and all those kind of things that, you know, you would normally think are more in the medical physics or biological physics realm. And that was my degree. But it turns out that was very helpful when I started to look at, you know, patients that went through some kind of event with a UAP or some unknown phenomena where they would have lesions and they would have interruptions with their, you know, physiology or something like that. And I was able to take those skills and apply them directly to these patients.
I think a lot of folks will know those five observables that are talked about, and the sixth observable tends to be that biological effects on sure. humans, which is obviously the really unfortunate side of things. So that's your entry into studying this phenomenon. Was that with OSAP and Bigelow Aerospace, or did that come before?
It happened right after that. So it was very apparent at some point along Bigelow's investigation that people were getting hurt. They were having, you know, they were getting to catatonic states and they would have these lesions develop on their body and they, you know, they would get deathly sick, you know, I mean, really bad sick. You know, they would have, you know, discolored urine and all the indications that something entered their body and was happening. So when that all concluded, you know, at the end of that whole thing, you know, Hal kind of said to us, he says, you know, we really don't need to understand this better. I mean, people are getting hurt. We need to put a fine point on it and figure it out. And of course, at that time, that's when the Havana Syndrome started kicking up. Of course, they didn't call it that at that time. You know, it was just a bunch of people down in a consulate that got hurt, but it turned out that it was hurt in a very specific way that led to us to believe that it was electromagnetic or radiation, and the vector was radiation.
Let me walk you back a few steps then. So how did you come to be involved with the OSAP program and with Bob Bigelow?
Well, of course, Hal Puthoff was Bob Bigelow's main science advisor. He was the guy that actually directed a lot of things. So everything went through his lab. So a lot of the data that was collected through that whole experience was brought to Hal's lab for investigation and, you know, going through it and analyzing it. So that's when I was actually hired, not hired, but I was brought on. So my internship actually happened at the time that, that all that data was coming back. And that's one of the reasons that I was brought on to help with the analyzing it. So I was, you know, right out of the gate, I was actually, you know, put down and, you know, here's all sort of crazy data that's coming from this place. You know, let's make some sense of it. So that's
walk us through that then. What that must be wild. Like you say, you're going in there, you're not going in as a UFO guy, you know, as such. You're a scientist, you're an engineer, you're introduced to this whole new set of data. What are you being told as the aim here? What's the objective, and what are those initial days and weeks like?
Yeah, so the objective with all that data analysis is to figure out if there's any patterns that are developed there. You know, because you nature has lots of random noise, right? Random noise is happening all the time. What they're trying to do is pick out places where they have consistencies or repeated patterns that they might see. Well, that might be just isolated the phenomena actually making this particular thing. So they're looking for patterns and anything that's falling out that might indicate that it's an intelligence doing this as opposed to just random noise from the environment.
What's going through your mind though when are you hearing stories already of dogmen, portals, UFOs, crazy werewolves, or is it still very much the scientific side of it at that point?
Well, at that point, I didn't really know a lot about that. It was all, you know, kind of step back, look at the data, view it objectively, trying to understand it and see it, look for any patterns. Then you start saying, well, here's a pattern. And then, of course, the conversation starts, you know, maybe it's a UFO, maybe it's a portal, maybe it's a, you know, space-time metric perturbation where you might have something going on that's affecting the entire environment or the entire local environment. So then you start speculating. And then, of course, you know, science is a building tool, right? You have a little, you take a little bit of knowledge and you build on top of it. So once you establish something, then you say, okay, now can we run an experiment that allows us to further understand what's going on? So maybe if it was a portal, let's design an experiment that would really pinpoint that it was a portal. So look at maybe some, you know, some quantum clocks or something like that.
So we're talking Skinwalker Ranch for folks maybe less familiar with the OSAP study, but were there other areas of interest you were studying as part of this as well?
Well, it actually turned out, and this is something that we found out later on. So the sponsor that Hal had for funding all his research everywhere, you know, so it's had this amazing person that funded all of his work for 30 years. You know, we went to him and said, look, you know, this is a very interesting area. Skinwalker Ranch is great, but the entire Uinta Basin is just chock full of all sorts of crazy phenomena that's going on that's totally unexplained. So we started to branch out from there, and we ended up being way up into the mountains. I don't know if you're familiar with the Uinta Basin, but there's a ton of instances that are more up toward the canyon where the mountains start and things like that. So in fact, just recently I was up at Blind Frog Ranch. It was another very, very popular, actually it's a show, but it's a ranch that has a lot of very crazy things happening. I was just there for a week filming for their show, trying to understand and get some data for them so they can show their audience that, you know, in fact, it is happening on their property. But it turns out that whole area is just rich with all sorts of phenomena. So, and we actually launched the study 4 years ago now, where we distributed 35 pieces of equipment out to people that we felt were really good subjects and let them have that in their environment continuously, you know, 24/7. And at the same time, they would report back to us any experience that they would have, like, you know, spottings of UFO or, you know, any kind of weird thing that would happen to them, they would report it back to us.
So let's talk about that equipment. Are we talking about individual little small pieces of equipment here? Are we talking bigger scale?
Well, some of the equipment was very small, so it was personalized. You know, it went from like being something you wear on your wrist to something that you placed on your dresser or, you know, in your kitchen or something like that, to bigger piece of equipment that actually was on the outside. So it's like, you know, this is one of the devices. I don't know if you can see it. So this is one of the devices that people use now that, you know, allows them to have to look at, you know, things around in their environment. So this thing records 18 different sensors that are recording continuously, or 18 different channels that ascends and it correlates it with things that are happening in the environment, happening to the person. So those are kind of the things that were in that. But there's bigger pieces of equipment that have, you know, big antenna arrays and things like that that we use on big pieces of property, like, you know, maybe Black Frog Ranch or something like that.
So for the folks listening, Jim just held up the device, the MUPAS device, which is Modular Unidentified Phenomenon Alert System. So that's like the size of a kind of an old mobile telephone, Jim, going maybe back to the 80s, kind of brick-sized,
It's pretty small. I mean, it's meant to be, you're not intrusive, just kind of sit over in the corner someplace, take data, and, you know, basically allow these people to, like, go through their lives, not really, you know, inflict anything on them, but let them report back, you know, what's going on in their life, and then correlate that with stuff that's going on. And what we did find out over the 3-year period was that when people did report that they were having instances with this phenomena, there were changes in signals in the environment that we recorded, and we had to correlate those two. In fact, I have some examples if you want to see some of them.
Yeah, please. Just let me know, though, what types of folks, are these people coming forward to you to volunteer themselves to say, I'm having an experience, I think I'm an experiencer, or are there folks you're going out to almost as test subjects as well that you don't believe are having any experience just to see what kind of data is recorded?
So we went back to our sponsor allocated enough money to do 50 people. We only ended up doing 35, but the people that we did pick were verified. So they had medical conditions that were verified by an attending physician. So they had medical records. They went through all sorts of testing and things like that before we actually got them as patients or test subjects. And, you know, we said to them, you know, we want to instrument you and see if we can get any data and repeat what happened to you. So a lot of these people were people handpicked that were, they had something happened to them. They had experiences at some point that maybe had led to some medical, some chronic medical conditions that they were suffering with. So that's how we got a hold of some of these people. There's some people that didn't have, you know, out of the 35 people, there's probably 20% that didn't have any experiences. They were just interested in helping us with this. And so they were, you know, like, it was like a blind, you know, those people were, our blind subjects that were not creating any good data, but we had some really, really good people in there, some really, really good people. And then, you know, kind of middle of the road people that would just have an experience every day or so.
Yeah. So take us through some of the findings from that then. That sounds really interesting.
Well, it was quite surprising, actually, what really came about when we started doing this. The first thing we said is that, oh, it must be just the land, right? So the land is crazy. So we have to instrument the land. And we find out we put instruments where these people were, where they got hurt. And we didn't get anything for months. It was like, it was very low level, nothing happened. But when you introduce the people into the property or into that thing, that's when crazy stuff started to happen. So it turned out, and that's when we kind of retooled everything and decided to do things a little bit differently. That's where we kind of sought out these people and said, look, you put this in your environment. I think something, when something happens, you tell us it happens. We're going to be in the background monitoring your waveforms to see if we can actually spot something changing. So the biggest revelation in this whole thing was that when people claim to have these experiences, some paranormal experience or some kind of, you know, aberration or seeing UFOs or seeing, there is something that happens to them. There's some signal, electromagnetic signal, or some gamma rays or something like that, that's entering their body that's causing this. It's not something they're manifesting in their head. So that was the biggest revelation. And it was quite surprising for me personally, because I, you know, you think, well, nothing, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, but the first thing you think is that, well, these people are just making it up. I mean, they're just fabricating this in their mind, but you find out they're not fabricating. They might be hallucinating a little bit, but there's something that's causing that hallucination that's coming from the outside. So the vector is actually coming from outside, not inside. So they're being prompted, their brains are being prompted to rationalize this stray anomalous signal that's entering their body. And of course your brain, you know, our brains, human brains are very inventive. They can think of all sorts of things to rationalize because the brains don't want to have something that they don't understand. So they automatically, you know, we all do that. But that's what the biggest revelation is, that these people were not making this up. I mean, this is something that, you know, the lizard people and stuff like that, their brain probably invented. But the impetus to the thing that got that to them and showed that to them was not made up by them. So it was provided by some outside phenomena that we still to this day don't really understand.
So that's really interesting. I think one of the subjects on this study, and is it the same study? It was case study 316. And I was watching your News Nation interview with Ross Coulthart, so I'm picking this one out as you discussed it. And the patient, or the case study, sorry, said they actually felt in one experience it was, they're alluding to being abducted, essentially, as a statement made. Is that right?
Yeah, so it was a very strange situation. We've had many like that, but this was a really big one that came out. And it just that this person was very well grounded, a school teacher, you know, so math teacher, in fact. So you know, math teachers really don't have a lot of, you know, they don't usually make things up, very, very structured. But this person said, wow, I just felt like I left my body for a little while. I mean, she's never felt like this ever, ever. And then all of a sudden, this person just came back and said, look, you know, if I would say I was abducted, that was the night I was abducted. And, you know, a complete out-of-body experience. And, you know, the signals went crazy. I mean, and the device, and it was kind of weird because the device was like in a completely different room. So whatever happened, it happened more, not so local to her, but it was like surrounding. And I think at the time, there was some problem with the dogs. I think the dogs went completely ballistic. And there was some other things that happened, you know, in the neighborhood. So this was a serious event that happened.
Is there anything within that data, within the patterns you're seeing across the data sets that would suggest, and this maybe ties in a little bit with you're saying, if someone's having an experience in their mind and you're saying, let's say the quote unquote makeup lizard people, could it be these abductions are happening in a non-physical sense that they are, consciousness or whatever it may be is experiencing a genuine abduction but their physical body isn't? Would that maybe explain some of that for you, or is that still
no? I think you, I mean, that you just hit it on the head. I mean, that's exactly what happens. I think there's a lot of, so we record for like 3 years, we let these 35 people just record their narratives, you know, this is how I felt. If you look through those narratives, you will see a pattern where they say that, you know, for 2 hours I felt like I was not in control. I was just went into a complete trance and, you know, like a catatonic state, and they would see things. But at the same time, you would get this weird stuff happening on the screen or on the device. You'd get, you know, these low level changes in the environmental signals that indicate there was something going on. It was, you know, you have to say, well, maybe it was coming from them, but the level of these signals really couldn't be human made unless, you know, we have the capabilities of doing that. So a lot of it is, you know, when you say abducted, you know, is your consciousness abducted or are you physically abducted? I think most of the cases are your consciousness is abducted and you get to communicate with things. And, you know, you kind of think about different ways that that can possibly happen. And what if, you know, an outside being or a being from another, you know, galaxy or something like that uses some type of mechanism to communicate with us. But in order to do that, it basically shuts off our environment and they get the opportunity to talk with us. So maybe that's an abduction. So we weren't physically abducted, but for a very short period of time, our brains were abducted.
In those examples, because I'm sure there are many folks listening to this who would say abductions do still happen in a very physical sense, but could it be abduction maybe is the wrong word for those types of experiences?
Yeah, so they would go into a trance. They would, you know, they would go down into some state where it shuts off everything. Because I've heard, you know, they would, you know, these narratives that they people give me. It's, you know, I walk down into see my family 2 hours later, and they said, you know, where have you been for the past 2 hours? So that type of thing. So it's not that they've gone away. It's just that, you know, whatever makes them has gone away for a little while.
And across that substantial data set you're collecting then, do you see patterns emerge that perhaps you can almost predict when one of these events may happen? Is there any particular either type of person genetically or scenario or environmental conditions where you can actually say, do you know what, these are the right conditions for this to happen?
Yeah, you know, one of the unfortunate things, choosing 35 people is a very, very small group. So any statistics that you get are very biased towards certain groups within there. So a lot of the people, I would say 20% of the people that were actually good subjects of the study were Native Americans. So, and there it's exceptionally intuitive to this stuff. And so they actually were very easy to predict. So you can look at the waveforms and you actually, I don't know if you are familiar with AI at all, but the when you talk about getting statistical models together, a lot of this stuff is required to use AI. So you bring it to AI, and of course, AI will give you a prediction. You know, one of the outcomes of it is not only their statistics, but you could, it'll actually help you predict. So if you put in a waveform for a person for the pat for say for a period of 6 months, and you could say, you know, it looks like in the next 2 or 3 weeks, this person's going to have some type of event. So you can almost predict it. And I think I got to the point with just not the full 35, but say maybe a smaller subset of that to get to a, what they call a sigma of 4.3 I was able to get to, which is pretty, not really good. I mean, it's you couldn't publish on that, but it actually was pretty impressive that, you know, you can actually start making predictions with the, for these people.
I wonder then, in studying this UFO phenomenon, loads of folks in the community or otherwise call for transparency, and they want to know everything that's happening with the topic, whether it's at the in the private sector, you know, they want Lockheed Martin stormed and all the materials, you know, taken out, all that kind of stuff. But is there a benefit to these studies being private for you, or do you think that transparency and public-facing side of it is the way to go?
Well, a lot of what I data I collect is extremely personal. And what I did is I made personal contact with these people. I showed them exactly how their data was stored, where it's going to be stored, and I basically guaranteed them that there nobody would ever. So I never really released the raw data to anybody because it's like, you know, they're talking about their inner feelings and how things are happening. So you don't want to do that. I mean, that would be terrible to do. So I think that what comes out of the models and things like that, I think that is extremely important to send out to the world, because I want other scientists to jump on top of this and then bring their piece into the pile. You know, I don't want to be the only person that has this. You know, I've created this baseline of data, and now I'm going to go forward and, you know, give this to people. And I've given it to some pretty clever scientists that are looking at it statistically to see if they can cull any other information that I didn't think of out of it. So I like the idea of bringing it out to the world, but I'm very sensitive to the fact that in order to get that data, people had to have given their personal information, which is really not good to send out.
What's the natural next steps for this? Is it just as simple as getting more people involved, bigger data pools? Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, it was kind of ironic and it was actually kind of weird, but about a year ago, I shut down the study. I had done 3 years. I thought I had great data. I was able to, you know, walk away with a good amount to, you know, to publish a book or basically publish a book and maybe some papers. So these 35 people came back, and I actually almost like a couple hundred people came back at me and said, you can't stop. You know, they felt so secure with this device in their presence that they actually said, you need to continue this. And I said, that's fine, but you know, the funding that I had to do this is it was gone because our sponsor said you have 3 years and that's it. So that was it. And so they said, well, we'll pay for these devices ourselves. You know, they wanted to have the comfort that they know that these devices, and what I was actually doing, just to rewind a little bit, what I was doing is providing information back to them about 2 weeks delayed so they wouldn't actually see anything in real time. But then they can go back and say, you know, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had this experience, you know, what would the waveforms look like? And I gave them the ability to do that. They love that. And that make them feel really good about that. Sometimes they didn't see anything, you know, I made them understand that, you know, it's very possible that your experiences are not going to be recorded. Maybe the sensitivity of the equipment, maybe it wasn't in the right place or whatever, but so now I've got a lot of people that came back to me and, you know, they said, look, you know, we want to purchase these things. We'll give you the money. So I built a bunch of devices that I don't make any profit on. I just, you know, whatever it costs, put it together and ship them out. And people are buying them and they're going crazy. So, you know, that's the next one. And the whole objective here, you know, once I started this thing up again, is that, yeah, I want to increase the number of people, but I also want to diversify out into the rest of the world. I mean, so there's so many other places than, you know, it's only, you know, arrogance to think that it only happens in Utah. You know, Utah thinks that they're like the UFO capital, but that's not the case. It's like they're very, very small little incidents. I mean, if you go, I just got back from, or we had a very great incident in Norway at the Hestaland Lights. We were just there for a week. Had an amazing event that happened. So we had the MUPAS equipment there and recorded some amazing things. And now they're calling back, says, you got to come back because we want to have more data. Because there was some really crazy stuff that happens. You know, people like that going out into Australia and going out to all sorts of places. You know, Africa has tons of it. South America has tons of stuff. So it's getting it out to those people. And there's a lot of great interest, you know, outside the United States. And, you know, like I said, just USA arrogance thinks it's only them. But, you know, it's like, you know, no, guys, everything. It's the whole world is infected by this.
So listeners and viewers to this right now can pick up one of these devices and they can, that gets fed back to you, is that right?
Well, it goes up to the cloud and then it's fed into the data every night. So every night we churn all what's going on and, you know, we report it back to whatever scientists are signed up to look at it. And then we provide, you know, people access to it on a 2-week delay so they can see what's going on.
I'll get the link from you and I'll put that in the description as well, because I get people sending me, Jim, incidents all the time, whether it's experiences, and I won't go into all the details, but for me, it's just sharing it with me and they feel it's someone to share it with. But it sounds almost like you've got people who wanted to carry this on, because it almost gives them a sense of validation as well, that this is happening and here is the actual raw data in front of them. There's something to this.
That's exactly right. So one of the things that happened is that I got contacted by a lot of people and they wanted to see the results. They wanted to see what I was doing. So I put up a little website that I put all of my data on. And then I offer to have, being able to sign up and things like that and ask questions. So that's the site that I came up with. I think I gave you you can go back one. Yeah, the main page.
Experiencer-studies.com and then / MUPAS for the actual.
Actually, MUPAS was, I don't know what the heck that was. I just copied the wrong thing. So it's go back to that. The main screen is there. So the main screen is one back.
Cool.
It's just experiencerstudies.com. And then I list a lot of the things that are going on. Like, for instance, we had a possibility to sign up to monitor. So that's another thing people wanted to do. You know, we have these like Blind Frog Ranch, we have devices, and we have Mount Wilson, we have devices, and people love to just monitor those, to watch them, to see, you know, all the weird stuff that's going on. So we had the opportunity for people to go in there and sign that up. That actually went away, so I think that link might not work anymore. But, you know, that's one of the things that we offered people, is that, you know, go in there, look at it. It's, you know, it's available. So it was actually quite intriguing for people to watch things. So we're going to do the Hestaland. Actually, I'm going to replace the one that's there right now with the Hestaland lights, so they can actually watch that from their home and report on it and comment and, you know, do whatever they want to do.
People love that kind of stuff. I know listeners who regularly enjoy watching flight radar for certain things, or Skinwalker Ranch's CCTV stuff, which I know is part of it, and they will watch that. So, you know, I can't comment, because back in the day when Big Brother first started, I would watch them sleeping during the night when I was a kid. But, you know, so people all watch all kind of weird and wonderful things. And this is something that they're actually going to benefit from, and they're contributing to a scientific study. So people will absolutely love that. Let me ask, though, on these studies. So from a scientific point of view, there's a lot of real data you can dig into and verify and pull out of these. Is there anything from a personal point of view in the UFO study in general you either feel isn't worthy of study but maybe get some attention, or you don't want to study for personal reasons or whatever that may be?
Not really. I think, you know, when you look at anomalous things, you have to kind of ask yourself the question, you know, is there like multiple anomalous things going on simultaneously? They say, no, it's all basically all related. So anything that you can like put a label on of things that just don't fit what you think it is, that I would say, let's investigate it. You know, I So like telepathy and you know, telekinesis, all those things are probably all intertwined and related to what we're experiencing here as what we call the UFO, you know, phenomena.
And you mentioned earlier, I'll bring you back to it, Havana syndrome. Just for those who may be unfamiliar with Havana syndrome, it's hit the social media headlines quite a few times. It's featured prominently in a few different major news networks conversations as well. But what exactly is Havana syndrome, Jim, and why is it relevant to the UFO topic?
So it was actually happened in 2016, I believe. There was a consulate down in Havana, U.S. consulate, that simultaneously, the 35 to 40 people simultaneously all of a sudden got an incredible something happened to them. You know, it's some kind of electromagnetic or something happened to them where they started getting intense earaches, headaches. Some people fainted, passed out, you know, a whole bunch of things. So they brought all those people back to area hospitals in the United States and they investigated it. In fact, there was a whole bunch of agencies, government agencies that did reports on them and found out that there was some type of, they thought it was a weapon, you know, some kind of a sonic weapon beginning. And then towards the end of the investigation, they figured out it was electromagnetic, like a pulsed array or something like that, that hit them. And then what they tried to figure out, you know, reverse engineer and find out where it's coming from. And they didn't really feel that it was coming from anything like a weapon or things like that. And they felt that it maybe was coming from UFO, UAP. So it was more of a, oh, that's interesting. You know, is it possible that this is actually intertwined with the UAP problem or the UAP topic that we were talking about? And these people were getting hurt in extreme. So you might have somebody that's in the United States that was complaining of an injury. And these people that are also complaining about the Havana syndrome. And those two cases were almost identical, you know, in the actual medical evidence that was obtained from them. And not just one or two, I mean, many, many. So right now there's well over 200 or 300 different cases of Havana syndrome in the United States. And they're not just government people. They're just lots, you know, probably right now, maybe 30, 40% of them are just regular people with, you know, just out in the world doing their thing and they're being affected by this. So now it's thought that it's more of a, you know, maybe it's just another instances where the UFO is actually creeping into this and saying, okay, and we're saying that, you know, maybe this is because of the presence of a UFO.
What do you think? Because obviously you've touched on some of the possibilities. One, it's a foreign agent, you know, some sort of Chinese or Russian sonic weapon for spying. Who knows? Very Mission Impossible sounding, but sure. I imagine some of that technology is pretty incredible and pretty scary. Two, it would be something more exotic, like you say, from a UAP, UFO. Or is there a third option that it's a more natural phenomena? And I wonder, is there one that you lean more towards from a scientific perspective?
Well, I think that it's quite possible that, you know, somebody has designed a weapon or somebody has designed some type of device that can put out this kind of energy that does this kind of thing. And, you know, that's one of the definite possibilities. So that's why you instrument people. You try to get, so actually I was contacted by the people that were investigating this to put these types of devices so they can, in other words, catch it in the act later on. But, you know, unfortunately, you're basically closing the barn door after the horses leave. So it's very difficult to do. So we never actually got to the point where that's actually worthwhile. But I feel that based on what came out of the medical reports that came from these people, and I saw quite a few of them, it is very apparent that something of high energy, low, very, very short, you know, short time period, like in the milliseconds or even, you know, sub-millisecond. So it's an energy type of phenomena that could come from a satellite. It could come from, you know, a car outside or, you know, some kind of a truck. So it really isn't, my feeling is that I think that when we figure out where it came from, we're going to be surprised, but we're not going to be too surprised that it came from something that was, you know, either human made or something that was extraterrestrial made.
So let me start to segue into a few more questions from myself before we finish up with some listener questions, Jim. And there was a huge, huge amount of them that I'll have to get you back on to even scratch the surface of. But I wonder then, as someone with a scientific background, I want your thoughts on the Sol Foundation. So they had their first conference last year, and that's Dr. Gary Nolan, Peter Skafish, and others set that up. How do you see more scientists, more academics coming in and that, what seems quite a serious way to get involved in this topic?
Well, you know, Gary's pushing hard. I mean, so I work with Gary a lot. So we have a property. He and I are working with a couple of properties. One of them is New Hampshire that's actually seeing a lot of ORBs. So Gary and I are actually always working together on that. So I give him a lot of credit. I mean, he's trying to get all this together. The problem still is, because he's at a very high, you know, falutin university that would never sponsor anything. So universities will never get into this area. You know, they'll come in kicking and screaming at one point, but there's going to have to be a lot of money available for the universities for them to actually get an interest, because it's not a great subject for them. So, but these personal things that Gary's doing, you know, these foundations and these conferences that he's running, I think they're amazing. So I think that's the right way to go. And, you know, it's just like anything you put, if somewhere out in industry or the regular world, people know that they can do something and maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say profit from it, or, and, you know, I'd say it's better off not in the government hands. I think it's better off in, you know, like the personal hands of people like entrepreneurs and things like that. There's not a lot of money to be made in this area, obviously, but the government, you know, I think that they have, you know, their own agendas, and they change all the time, right? Every 4 years they're going to change and change. So, you know, the Space Force changes everything, you know, the whole administration changes. So I think you put it in hands like Elon Musk type of things, that's when you're going to start seeing some real, real things going on, is that when the private sector gets involved.
So that's interesting then. So it looks like at time of recording, the UAP Disclosure Act 2.0, the former Schumer-Rounds Amendment, isn't going to make it through to this year's NDAA. Not unsurprising, I think, for a lot of folks. Were you expecting that to fail?
I think it was like the odds were pretty good it would fail, and then everybody was bracing to the fact that, you know, we're going to have to move on anyway. If you want to be in this area and you want to investigate, don't count on it. You know, count on yourself doing your own thing and you know, getting through.
As part of that, one of the big talking points, I'm very curious, given your background on this, was eminent domain. So the idea that the government can just come and take back, I suppose, blue sky thinking was the government can storm Lockheed Martin, Boeing, you know, Skunk Works, and take back the UFOs and take back the bodies. But it basically meant they could reclaim any material from anyone they saw fit.
Yeah.
My understanding from some folks, though, not being from the States, is the US government have that capability anyways in their remit. So actually having it in the legislation wasn't necessarily going to be a deal breaker anyway. But as a scientist, how do you see that someone can come in and just take your work and take your materials?
So I think to cut that off, my view is that the data should be given to the public anyway. And so I don't think the government has a right to do that, but I think the public has a right to do that because it's collected by the public. It's, you know, this data is about the public. So, you know, the government come in and do anything they want. In fact, one of the instances that, one of the 35 people, one of them was an actual high level government employee that was having significant problems at home, you know, with several family members. And I provided NCIS with a report on data that was collected from the devices that were in their local environment. So the government is involved, you know, the government is interested in getting this data. You know, will they come in and just take it from you? I don't know. But I think to head that off, I like to get it out to the public and just say, you want it. Well, it's already on the public. So, you know, that's never going to happen. Then I think that's a lot of the issues that entrepreneurs are going to have, is that, you know, they're going to want to take the data, use it for themselves and keep it private. And that's one of the unfortunate things for the public, is that, you know, once it gets into the private hands, it'll stay private. But same with the government. Once it gets into government hands, it'll stay private as well. So, you know, it's going to be a tough one.
So with years of research, years of exposure to the UFO topic, I wonder, do you feel we're getting close to some kind of major revelation, major reveal, major paradigm shifting moment that we get some form of true disclosure for what many folks are looking for? Or do you see this being a topic that we're still looking at studying like this 10, 15, 20 years or more into the future?
Well, I think there is a crossroads very soon. People are not embarrassed or frightened to come forward and admit they're having experiences. So people that see things, they don't, you know, 20 years ago, they would never say anything because it's like a, they would, it's like a stigma that would affect them. But now they're, you know, with the social media, the acceptance from other people. So now we're getting much more data. You know, right before it was just, you know, these anecdotal things that you would pick up along the way, or people that would, you know, that really hurt. But we want everybody, you know, we want to have everybody's opinions and all this information, and that we can actually sift through all that information to get some good stuff. But now there's a lot of people coming forward. If you look at the Reddit groups, I mean, the Reddit groups are just chock full. There's over 3 million in the UFO Reddit group, and the Experiencer Reddit group has almost 75,000. So there's a lot of people that are willing to go and talk about their instances, and that's all good, rich data. And that's what we're looking for in order to build good statistical models. And of course, the reason you want to do that is that, yeah, you want to see if there's a pattern, if there's any predictability, if there's, you know, something that it's just not noise. You know, are we seeing these UFO occurrences in areas, and are, you know, they pocketed and they related to some other phenomena, and that you can only do that by getting lots and lots of data. And I think that now that people are, you know, they're not really worried about, or maybe the effect of being ridiculed is not as high as it was, you know, they're coming forward and saying, you know, I just saw it. Here's my pictures. You know, this is all the data that I collected.
So I wonder, Jim, let me frame it this way. If you're at one of these conferences with these entrepreneurs and venture capitalists, and they're looking to spend some money and throw some money at some funding, and one of these guys corners you and says, you know, Jim, you're studying this UFO thing, you know, is this real? You know, are we encountering flying saucers and the like? You know, what are you saying back to that?
Well, first of all, I mean, right now there's enough data. You can't discount the fact that something's going on. You know, anybody that says there's nothing going on, they really haven't opened their eyes. They haven't even, you know, they haven't really even, you know, dipped their toe to figure out what's going on. So I think it's the foregone conclusion is something is happening. There's enough photograph evidence. There's enough recorded evidence to show that there's something going on either in the air or just, you know, through portals or whatever. So there's something going on. So that's the first answer. Would say there's, you can't discount all these millions and millions of people that have seen this thing and have evidence. So that's the first thing. And the second thing I said, I would challenge them. He says, you know, I would invite these people to actually invest in these kind of things, but, you know, where is their model? I mean, normally people in private industry, venture capitalists, they want a return. You know, how do you put this into a monotonic thing? How do you actually monetize this type of thing? It's all, I can't think of anything. I'm not smart enough to think of how those people can make money at it, but, you know, that's what's going to have to happen in order to get them on the, you know, to come in.
Listen, Jim, let's get to some listener questions. Like I say, so many of them, and I want to try and get through what we can in the kind of last time we've got remaining. So thank you to everyone who sent stuff in. First off, the Human Neutrino asked, has Jim ever had any experience of the hitchhiker effect, and can he describe it? And also as part of that, has Jim seen any UFOs of his own?
Well, I mean, hitchhiker is very strange. So I have had instances where I've known people to have hitchhiker. So somebody that completely healthy family went home and people started to get this rare blood disease or something like that. So I've had many of those type of things, you know, maybe half a dozen, which is a lot. So me personally, nothing has happened to me personally. Well, you have to say that because you don't really know. I mean, how do you quantify that? How do you actually say, because I do have people in my family that have things going on, but that could just have happened even if I didn't do Skinwalker Ranch, or I wasn't on, you know, at Blind Frog Ranch or whatever. So I would say that, you know, the likelihood that something happened to me personally, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I could know. But I know other people that definitely happened to. So, you know,
so you've had like no poltergeist type experience. I think is the instant thing people go to is that whole George Knapp idea. I spoke to you know, Brian Arnold. I've spoken to a few folks from Skinwalker Ranch, and that idea, something follows you home and is physically interacting with your environment. Nothing like that.
Yeah, nothing like that for me personally. But I, like I said, I know lots of people that's happened to. So it's a definite thing that happens. And I myself have seen, you know, I've had one experience. In fact, it was on the Skinwalker show. And unfortunately, I convinced everybody afterwards that it was a satellite. It wasn't a UFO. Because, you could figure that stuff out just using it. But, you know, producers love to have, like, drama. So, but it was actually a... unfortunately, or not, I shouldn't say unfortunately, I think it was a satellite, but, you know, at Blind Frog Ranch, it actually turned out that I did have an experience that I was not expecting. And you can say that, you know, when you go to an area and you all of a sudden start hearing, you know, not hearing the environment, you're not hearing anything, you kind of like close in on yourself. And that's the start of an experience. And I did have that to a very lesser extent than a normal person that's more susceptible to having these. So the answer is yes. I think that I had an experience. I just, my brain can't rationalize it very well. But I was with two people that are very sensitive to this thing. And I turned to them and I said, you know, why are there no sounds? He says, well, we're all having an experience right now. So, you know, pretty confident that it actually happened to me.
I'm glad you said, though, about the Skinwalker Ranch being a satellite, because as much as people want this subject to be credible, and there's one extreme where you have folks online, on social media, on Reddit, all these forums who are debunking, you know, all kinds of UFO sightings, that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. And I think it lends more credibility and weight to the good data, to the good photos, to the good videos, to the good witnesses. Sure. So we have to be able to, on the other side of that scale, for me, to rationalize and say, no, this is probably a satellite. Not every picture, not every video, not every experience is a genuine anomalous object. And for me, that helps with the credibility of the subject. Otherwise, everyone's just on podcasts and TV shows saying everything's a UFO.
Yeah, so, you know, I work with Travis Taylor, who's on that show. He's the lead scientist there. And I know for a fact that he doesn't let anything go by that is, you know, made up or anything like that. He's very particular about what he puts his name on. So, but you go, the thing about science is that you can get fooled really, really quickly, very, very easily. So you have to have checks and balances, and you have to, that's why they have the peer review system. So, and that's what you have to, that's another thing I would, you know, any venture capitalist to come in or anybody that comes in, this is what you really want to do is you want to be able to publish this stuff through a peer review system. And, you know, that's when you start really getting really good data.
Yeah. Question from Russell. He says, something that has puzzled me. Bob Bigelow is a very wealthy individual, and given his lifelong interest in the subject and the uniqueness of the site, why did he sell Skinwalker Ranch?
So it actually, I think actually this is public now. He actually, the hitchhiker effect happened to him personally. His wife got sick. And he came home one day and she basically said, you know, I don't want you going back there. I mean, you're done. So he sold it because of her. Yeah. And it was a very heartfelt thing. So he got rid of it because of her.
As good a reason as any, to be honest. And
And she subsequently died of a very rare blood disease, but I mean, he did do it.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Skeptical Believer says, of all the anomalous findings at the ranch, which one is the most significant to you, Jim? And which tests would you like to see done? I read one day Eric Bard was frustrated and said, if you have something to show me, then show me. Then his screen read, I living or I live. Is that story true?
I don't know. You know, I can't comment on that stuff because that's, I don't even know if that's, yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. I would like to comment on it, but I have no idea.
I've heard the story, but for the first part of the question, of all the anomalous findings at the ranch, which one do you think is the most significant and maybe you'd actually want to follow up on?
Yeah, so there was a couple of surprising things that Travis and I found, you know, during the first year that I was on there that I really wanted to go back and understand more. There was some there were some reflections off of the Mesa that didn't make sense. I mean, it just didn't make sense. And we didn't have the opportunity to go back and redo it. So, you know, science is done on a, you know, a piecemeal type of thing. You do a little bit, you make a conclusion, you add on to that and add on to that. So, you know, we took a laser, we focused it on the Mesa. It came back weird. And we didn't have the time to say, okay, well, let's do something else to maybe get some information. So, I mean, of all the things that happened, that was the one thing that just puzzled me.
How much, and you sort of mentioned this before about producers looking for, and let's be fair, you've got a scientific experiment, a genuine, and I believe this, a genuine scientific experiment being done at Skinwalker Sure. Ranch, an ongoing one. But you've got a TV show where those producers and execs aren't really caring about the science. They want drama. They want UFOs, they want soundbites. One of my pet hates in TV shows is when quite clearly you're seeing a reaction shot of someone, but they're not reacting to what's just been said. It's a reaction from something 5 minutes
sure.
ago.
I mean, that's, yeah. I just went through that this week, Blind Frog Ranch, yeah.
My wife watches all kinds of shows with those types of things, so when I see it in a UFO type setting, it's frustrating. But how do you think the TV production takes much away from the scientific study?
I'm going to be completely honest with everybody, and I don't hold this back. The reason I left the show is because it's very difficult to mix drama with science. So yeah. I said, I'm here to do science, guys. I'd rather leave the drama to people that are good at drama, and I'll leave the science to people that are good at science. So that show being, you know, because that show is really a reality show, so it has to have drama. So I got out of there quick. You know, that's, I said, this is not for me. But other shows, I mean, there's a show on National Geographic coming out in a couple months that I did a bunch of episodes for that was nothing to do with drama. It was all science. The Blind Frog Ranch episodes that I just filmed was all science. There was no drama whatsoever. So those are the kind of things that I kind of go gravitate towards.
Kate asks a question for you, Jim. Have any mediums or psychics been invited onto the farm? And if so, did anything come up from that sort of thing?
Yeah, so before the show, Bigelow brought a bunch of people. There was one in particular, Kay Randall May, that was just amazing. And he's a remote viewer and things like that. So there was a bunch of people, good people. So I forgot the name of the other people that were there. Anyway, so good remote viewers that came on and really just surprised everybody by just verbalizing exactly what was going on there without even knowing it. You know, there was actually an instance where we went to somebody and said, or Bigelow went to somebody and said, you know, there's a place in the United States that blah, 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 you know, very, very vague. And they came out with all this stuff that was like pinpointed everything that happened. It's just amazing. So whatever Skinwalker, or actually the Uinta Basin is, and we have people that do general Uinta Basin stuff, must be a lot of energy flowing out of here, because these people just pick this stuff up and can rattle off all this information without knowing anything.
This is quite a speculative question, and I had it in for earlier, and the moment came and went, so I'm just going to ask you it. This was a listener question from me, sure. as Andy, listening to you talk, right? So there is a lot of evidence, it would seem, that a lot of these objects seem to go into the water off the coast around the United States and South America and whatnot, especially things like the Tic Tac. You know, they're observed going in, and there's various talk of underwater bases. This is where the conversation gets quite speculative, obviously. Is there any chance, or from the data you have seen, that these objects are just under the ground across the United States because they're going in and out the water? And they're using whatever sort of systems are under the earth to navigate. And that's why there are areas that are maybe more, there's more electromagnetic interference, all that kind of stuff that's happening.
So, I mean, ironically, yeah. So that's 100% correct. So it turns out, and it's like, it never fails that you go to an area like Mount Wilson, or there's a place in near Las Vegas that's actually just like this, or Blind Frog Ranch or anything like that. And you start looking at the geology of it. You always find out there's a big body of water underneath it, right? There's always something. There's always seems to be a mountain in the background with a big body of water underneath it. So it just seems like every time you have an area that's super hot, there's always something underneath you know, some aquifer or something underneath like that, that, because under Blind Frog, there's all these rivers and canals and water flows. And so it just always seems that there's water somewhere underneath where they can use it. You know, is it possible that there is just a cavern for sending information? Because these little river under these little tributaries underneath the water is great for carrying communications. Mm. Like electromagnetic energy flows through it, sound flows through it. It's amazing. But it always turns out there's always some type of water underneath.
I just think that's something that's probably missing. It's a hard thing to study. You know, the equipment required to map all this kind of stuff must be incredible and incredibly expensive. But I just look at some of these areas and think, is it the fact that it's not necessarily just the air and these things are underneath? And, you know, it's a big planet and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Final question for you, because we're about to run out of time, Jim, but Dave Smethers sent in loads of questions. I'm going to pick one. He says, if Jim had to guess, does he think the intelligence or phenomenon seen at Skinwalker is AI directed or deployed by a living being? How would you set about deciding this?
So I think that a lot of the things that are happening on this planet are remote. So, like, if we wanted to go investigate some remote planet, I mean, the best way to do that is to send an intelligent probe, an AI. That's probably how we will do it, right? To send it out there. And that's what these wormholes might be, or these portals might be. It's just a way to get communication back so some AI can figure out what's going on. So, you know, you have to look at it and say, you know, is this, you know, this phenomena AI, or is it, you know, actually controlled? I mean, it was very difficult. I mean, you could give it the Turing test, right, to see if it's an actual being or if it's an AI. But I would bet that what's ever here is more on the remote AI sent to, you know, to communicate, see what's going on here. They didn't send any physical beings, but they might have sent their intelligence to figure stuff out and reports back to them, maybe through this portal or something like that. So that's a really good question, but it's easy to believe that that's probably the case, is that, you know, they're not sending beings here, but they're sending something here that can communicate, pull information out, you know, some kind of intelligence that's here.
Yeah, I think more and more these days I lean towards that, Jim, is a lot of these things are unmanned drones, but not human drones, yeah. Or some of the bodies are David Grush's non-human biologics, are these AI beings, you know, really advanced robots, because we would do the same, you know, in a couple of hundred years' time, yeah, even absolutely. Less our technology might be there. And it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jim, just to wrap up, for the last couple of seconds, how can people get in touch with you, find your work, and any final messages to the listeners?
Yeah. So that website, there's a way to chat. There's a, you can ask questions and things like that. You can sign up for studies and things like that. So I think I have a, I'm not the one that actually controls it, but I have a Facebook group that you can get into. I think if you just Google my name with Facebook, there, my thing comes up just for investigations, and I post some stuff there. But the best way to do it is just through this, that website. There's a, you know, contact me thing that we look at every morning, and we answer people and things like that.
Well, I'll stick that link in the description, folks. Jim, thank you very much for your time, and I truly mean it. We'll have to get you back on, because a lot of stuff still to go over, and hopefully people, I'm sure they have enjoyed this hour with you, so thank you very much.
Yeah, great questions. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium, YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a Tic Tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little orange. imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Mike, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. Then I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I called up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should see therapy. And I don't know what to do because it doesn't really scare me. If you really want to know who I think they'd be, I think it's you and me and us and we and him and her and that and she and that thing over there and what's that, Jane? But if you're being serious, open your mind, consider your heart, consider time, consider your space, consider your lies, consider your life, consider your eyes.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.